Welcome to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast with Julian Castelli. Each week, we talk with senior tech leaders to explore stories and insights about the challenges involved with growing technology companies. We hope that these stories can help you become a better leader and help you navigate your own growth journey.
Hello, this is Julian Castelli. I'm the host of the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast, where each week I talk with inspirational entrepreneurs and leaders in the tech industry and beyond. Past guests have included CEOs and CXOs of great companies like Workfront, CHG Healthcare, Pathology Watch, InMoment, Canopy, the San Francisco 49ers, and many more. This episode is brought to you by Growth Elevated. Growth Elevated is a community of tech founders, CEOs, and CXOs who are committed to working together to share best practices and learnings in an effort to help all of us become better leaders. We do this through educational programs like this podcast and our blog, and of course, our annual Ski and Tech Summit in beautiful Park City, Utah. So if any of that sounds interesting, please check us out at growthelevated.com. Today, I'm excited to welcome Brian Coyne, the CEO of The Service Companies, to the podcast. Brian is an agile, mission-focused leader who drives enterprise value and growth. Brian is an expert in developing people and teams and leading complex, high-tempo enterprises. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Julian. It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn more about the service companies and your career history. Let's start with the service company. What does the service companies do for services?
Well, we partner first with luxury hotels, casinos, timeshare ownership groups, and we help them solve, you know, really for them, thorny, labor-intensive operational challenges, Julian. We do it by providing and fully managing reliable staff in their hardest to operate departments. So we basically help them remain clean, safe, compliant, guest ready.
We help. So is this the housekeepers that change my rooms in a hotel? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's some of the team who we typically will run for major brands. They're some of our associates, you'll see. There's house men as well running around and stripping beds and moving linens from floor to floor. Many of our properties have 30 or more kitchens on our large.
30 or more kitchens in one property?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my gosh.
Large casinos.
Okay.
And tribal properties will have, you know, massive amount of square footage to help run, clean, et cetera. And we do a lot of that. So we do it all. We even do windows, Julian. It's not just a joke. We actually do them. We got guys who are very skilled, hang off sky rises and do hard to reach areas outside and inside high touch areas. But, we do it as a hospitality company. We are full of hospitality experts on our team. We have myriad teammates who have run hotels, been GMs at hotels and luxury casinos. So we know how to do it within their atmosphere, and that's why they bring us aboard.
So yeah, I guess when you stay at a hotel, you don't see all the things happening behind the scenes. But like at some of these hotels with 30 kitchens, like how many staff members are they employing that your company might help staff, like a large casino, for example?
Goodness, Julian. Well, we have nearly 200 employees in operation in some of our larger outfits.
200 in one property.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
Now there's multiple shifts throughout a 24-hour period. It really is a 24-hour operation, these major properties. We have people doing different work, and we run those departments for some of the biggest brands across those 24 hours, across multiple shifts. So yeah, on the high end, it can be nearly 200. On the lower end, in some cases, we'll just help a property with 10 employees and get them through a tough patch.
And why don't these hotels just hire people themselves? When did using a staffing, supplemental staffing services company come into the vogue in the industry? Is that something a lot of people do now, or most people staff themselves? How's that changed over time?
Well, I think it's been there for quite a while. I mean, we have a, as an example, you know, we're the premier provider. We've been in business for over 40 years, and it was started with one service line, and that was overnight kitchen cleaning. But that was outsourced. So that's been going on much longer than that, Julian. So I don't, it's not necessarily.
Is that just specialization? Like they just, you know, your company's more, you know, recruits more people than the staff at any one hotel. Are you able to do it better, faster,
well,
more efficiently?
Yes. I think that's really where we get into the meat of it. You know, it's hard to find reliable labor and workforce today. And, you know, it's been hard in the past. I think it's even harder today. COVID kind of sent a pulse, you know, through the industry, and, you know, it's changed quite a bit. I think it's probably harder now. And you know, there are some, just to answer your first question, I think there are some properties, luxury resorts who, you know, endeavored to do it all on their own. And that is, you know, that's where they stay focused. But in some cases they can't, because it is hard to find good, reliable labor. And the focus on covering that gap becomes, you know, so extreme, it starts to take the property leadership's eye off of other real core revenue producing areas. And they come to a realization, right? Or we help them come to the realization that, hey, you're losing out on opportunity here. The ability to market, let's use housekeeping as an example. The ability to, you know, unleash your marketing engine, bring full occupancy to bear, is driven by the, you know, being able to have, or having the confidence to know that your rooms can be turned on time, so that when guests check in, they're all going to have their room and they're not going to be held waiting, or, you know, moved down the street to another hotel because we couldn't clear the house.
Are you saying that hotels typically don't have all their rooms cleaned and ready to go, like that they have a shortage of being able to actually just turn the rooms? I'm not sure I ever thought of that as a guest of a hotel. I just assumed they're all, you know, hallways full of clean rooms, but that's not the case.
That's not way more than you would ever expect. That is a key challenge. And it's often driven by, you know, the bear that is finding good, reliable teammates.
Has that gotten harder more recently over time?
I think it has. You know, there's a competition for, you know, the frontline leaders that we have, and the competition for the frontline employees that we have today, where, you know, a skill set that we can hone, develop, and really bring, you know, through a leadership continuum is also sought after by, you know, all sorts of industries, you know, Amazon, you know, you name it, Julian. There's lots that that can pull people away from the industry. Where back before COVID, certainly there's a lot more examples of where people would stay within the industry for, you know, their entire career, just moving through the housekeeping ranks as one example. Today, we're finding that less people are doing that. And so, you know, organizations like ours that can still find and recruit massive amounts of people in a year. We recruit more than 10,000 people a year, which is very, very hard for any organization to do on their own, when they're also focused on turning rooms, and they're also focused on running kitchens correctly, cleanly, when they're also focused on casino gaming operations, which is their true revenue driver. You know, it's like, how many glass balls can I keep in the air? And so it makes a lot of sense, you know, for them to consider an outsourcing an option. And that's where we come in. When you outsource to a company like ours, a hospitality-specific company that knows what it's doing and is armed with, you know, experts who know how to do that and has a backbone of operational discipline, accountability, you know, and systems, the merging of those two things against their hardest to operate departments allows them to not worry about them anymore. It gives them the confidence that the consistency will be there, and they can focus on bringing more, you know, more players into town to gamble more, frankly, right? Or to just,
so basically, they can count on having the rooms taken care of, because the service companies can recruit the people, make sure they're there. They can train them to a certain standard. And therefore, if I'm running the hotel, I can focus on filling the rooms and driving revenue.
That's right.
Okay, that makes sense. You mentioned COVID a few times. I know that was enormously challenging for the hospitality industry. I remember when the hotels were empty and we couldn't go anywhere. How did that impact hospitality in general, and how did it impact the service companies?
Well, like much of the hospitality industry, Julian, our business contracted dramatically. I mean, almost overnight when the pandemic hit. I mean, we have a lot of, we're labor intensive as a company. And, you know, our company in a matter of weeks laid off thousands just out of necessity because nobody was
no one was in hotels, right? Everyone was staying home, right?
No one was
traveling.
The hotel. So, I mean, it was a, you know, truly, it was an existential moment here, and it forced some real change. And the recovery that followed wasn't simple. You know, I came in on the, you know, in the midst of that recovery, and I would say we're just now coming out of that phase, which is a good news story, but it wasn't simple. Client volumes in the industry, Julian, that we were reacting to, they were coming back slower than expected. You know, from you know, experts, their entire life in hotels or casinos, all were projecting a quicker return, and it just wasn't happening. The competitive landscape, you know, across the industry shifted a bit. Labor costs rose.
Mm-hmm.
The old relationship-based way of winning business, you know, for a company like ours, no longer worked the way it once had either. So now on the good news front, you know, I can certainly speak from my time implementing certain things. You know, rather than waiting for the market to fully return to normal and to presume it was going to return to normal, we used that period to rebuild the company's foundation from the floor up. Culture first, operations, the entire go-to-market approach, eventually, and now, like, we're super energized about automation at every turn. And so we're coming out stronger and more resilient than before.
So let's talk about, like, your career history a little bit, because I recall you telling me that, you know, you came in right after this COVID disruption, right? And had to help kind of rebuild the business, right? And you know something about recruiting and managing large groups of people, right? You had a very successful career in the U.S. Marine Corps, right? Tell us a little bit about your background and how that prepared you for coming into this, you know, challenging crisis moment at the service companies.
Yeah, Julian, my background prepared me really well for this job. It was an absolutely excellent fit. One of the core challenges coming out of COVID, you know, for a company like ours, was to deliver to property when properties were opening up the required amount of people to get the job done, you know, to the contract. And so, you know, recruiting and the ability to recruit and stabilize that again, was very hard. My background in recruiting, certainly helped on, you know, along those lines. But I'd say even more important than that, really, just being brought up, with, you know, in so many different, organizations within the Marines, all centered the same way though. You know, built around, you know, a solid foundation in planning, accountability, discipline, good leadership, integrity, all of that had to come to bear to fix first, I would say, the recruiting problem that not just the service companies was contending with, but everybody in the
You had this industry shock.
That's right. Right.
And everyone scattered and went and did different things. They became Uber drivers. They figured out other things, right? Now you have to bring everyone back. And the industry's been changing. So, like, give us some examples. Tell us a little bit about what you did in the military, just so we have the context. And then I'll ask you questions about how it related.
Okay. Well, at my core, I'm an infantry officer. Most of my time in the Marines was in the infantry. And if you're at all familiar with the military, you know, you want to be in the operational units that deploy and do the nation's bidding worldwide. I was fortunate to be, you know, in those units from my time as a young lieutenant of Marines. And I was able to, command units all the way through the rank of colonel, which culminated in commanding the largest Marine infantry regiment, certainly at the time, and non-standard large too, because of, some changes that were also taking place in the Marine Corps at the time. So I had 7 infantry battalions, about 1,000 strong each, that came through me to work through their training continuum, their development continuum, their execution continuum to be certified and ready to deploy to do the nation's bidding. And that's where the rubber meets the road. It's blueprinting and building those units from scratch in order to get them ready and reset them for deployment worldwide.
That's an incredible standard. You have to take the raw material, these people from all over the country, and make them ready to go to the front lines as a U.S. Marine Corps. That actually, I can't think of a better comparable in terms of what you're doing now, in terms of, finding talent and getting them up to a certain standard and, in the hotels. But, that working with the Marines was serious business.
It was. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. My family loved it. In fact, the only reason I got out is because of a health scare with my son, and it was just time for us. But I'll tell you, I loved every bit of it. But the skills, the mindset, the DNA that all Marines who spend, like me, spend more than a quarter century doing it, bring certainly to a company like this, which is, it's geographically disparate. I mean, we run from the East Coast of America to the West Coast. We're out in the Pacific in Hawaii. We're out in the Caribbean as well. We have, well over 300 clients, Julian. And, being able to operate a decentralized organization and constantly make sure you have a state of readiness, you have, a training program to speak of so that you can continue to promote from within, because it's way more efficient and, you engender loyalty. The ability to standardize operations, standardize an inspection program, and to just have a system to run an outfit like this. I mean, all of that for me, it was, frankly, secondhand because of my experience.
Yeah, you have a history and a process of bringing human labor to a certain standard, at a huge stage and such an important stage in the military. So now, applying that to the hospitality industry, do you find that that's an advantage for you? Like when you look at the rest of the industry, do they not have those kind of standards? And how's that played out at your tenure at the service companies?
I'm finding it more and more. The my client interactions, ownership group, GM level, director of hotel for large hotels, it's becoming more and more of a refrain. They're enjoying that engagement. They really appreciate the style, which is a little bit more direct. It's reliable. It comes with accountability and discipline, but more importantly, they're seeing in action what we talked about. And we're backing it up.
Yeah.
And
you're delivering it. Words alone don't matter if you don't deliver.
That's right, Julian. If you can't answer the mail when you're deployed as a Marine and you're sent into harm's way, and you don't uphold that reputation that Marines have landed, okay, you're putting your country at risk. Now, throttle down, the theatrical statement there, but it's a very true statement. Throttle that down for a second here in the hospitality space. They care just as much. In fact, some of these leaders that I interact with are just, they're absolute meat eaters, and they will, they will carve you up if you're not ready and you're not delivering. So what I'm finding in an increasing way is that they really are happy to be engaging with the service companies and that has a backbone from the military, but is also buttressed by, exceptional hospitality leaders who have spent, upwards of 30 years themselves, right, in the hospitality space. So the merging of those two disciplines and, that experience is really making a difference, not just within our company, but how we're perceived across the industry, and it's now getting us a nice referral base and allowing us to get more and more opportunities, and our pipeline is reflective of it.
That does sound really strong. You know, industry experience plus your military blueprint and experience there, that's a strong combination. So you were recruited for this job. Someone did a good job of finding you, but then COVID kind of blew things up, and you're coming in 2023. You get a battlefield promotion, I guess, even within the service companies, right?
I did.
And you know, that usually happens when things are hard. And I suspect things were pretty hard after COVID. So, you know, what did you see that convinced you that the company had some exciting potential at that time? I'm sure there were more challenges than opportunities. You had to look through those challenges a bit.
Well, yeah, Julian, when I came in, I saw a company that had a good reputation in the industry. Certainly had talented people, great teammates and great leaders here. And decades of experience, you know, serving premier hospitality brands. I mean, the biggest ones you can think of, right? And that foundation doesn't happen overnight. So it definitely told me there was something here to build on, and I was energized by that. But I definitely saw opportunities. There was no doubt about it. And you're right. I benefited from kind of coming in and needing to help stabilize and provide a little bit of stiffening here. So I saw a chance to elevate the organization by standardizing leadership, expectation, operational processes, accountability. And I, you know, to do so across every market we served. And that, you know, that focus and frankly, clarity allowed me very quickly to make some changes. We were very fragmented and decentralized. Just to give you one example at the outset, we ran nearly everything by regions, you know, across that front edge I spoke about earlier. Very little was centralized. The delivery was at best, you know, inconsistent. It allowed me to just, you know, very quickly, with some finger feel from what I had done in my past, make some changes where centralization made more sense to gain some economy of scale and efficiency.
So you can create a standard, and you can bring that standard from, you know, from your background across the whole organization, not one at a time.
That's right.
Regional department by department.
That's right. That's right.
So talk to me about the TSC way. Was that something you brought over from the Marines? Like that sounds like a very slogan-y type of thing that you probably had some different things in the Marines that you were inspired by.
Well, I mean, not directly. I mean, your last statement is true. I mean, I was definitely inspired by a lot, and we had a couple of slogans, but this one in particular was more homegrown, and it was based on, I mean, I drove it, but I drove it because of what I was seeing. I was fortunate to come in and observe for 2 months, really, in a position before I took over as the COO of this company. And in that observation, I laid out very clearly some of the things that I had seen. And a lot of it had really boiled down to, you know, we didn't have a clear strategy. We didn't really know who we were as a company, as a collective company. And the culture really wasn't clearly defined. And so I was able to bring in nearly 80 leaders across two different major venues and collaborate on this. And ultimately, we settled on the culture portion first. And the image their way through to 2025. This is back in 23. And, you know, let's put down on paper what kind of company we want to be proud of in 2 years. And what'll help us get there in terms of values and guiding principles. So we spent time on that first, Julian, and we called that collectively the TSC way. I was, you know, driving that mindset, but it was organic from those sessions. And that was step one. Step two was really evident from the recruiting and HR centralization work that we had to put in motion to be able to more effectively rely on the huge people engine that we need to count on, was employing that and blueprinting across a massive amount of battle space now, our operation, so that we were consistent and we weren't leaking. And so the TSD way is much more broad than the culture. The bigger piece of that is the operation now. And
sure.
each department within it. So,
well, let's double click on culture. I think that's really important. So, culture is often viewed as a soft topic, but this is a people standards industry. So why do you believe culture is one of the strongest drivers of operational performance?
Well, I think it determines how people operate and make decisions when no one's looking. And in our business, leaders can't be everywhere at once. It's just, you know, the way it goes. And that's, you know, most businesses are probably like that. I think that's why culture matters so much. So, you know, they have to know what you value. They have to know that, you know, the principles that guide the company, you know, are focused on them, what they're doing, and who, you know, who they're serving. And if they know they're believed in and cared for, and they're clear on what we're doing and why, and who we're serving and how we want that to come across, no matter what we can't be in front of as leaders, it'll probably get done. You increase your chances of it getting done better and the right way, you know. And then just simply, right? I think strong cultures reduce turnover. And because we have so many people, you know, that we're constantly, you know, partnering with, or, you know, or teaming with, you know, it matters a lot. Culture improves our engagement. And in hospitality, Julian, I mean, it's how you come across to the customer of our client and how you come across to our client matters greatly. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, it's a direct linkage to our P&L. And, you know, and so consistent execution, makes a huge bit of difference, you know, in terms of how we perform financially. Last, you know, I would say that, you know, culture is the engine. And I think it drives the company's, future success. You can put out a 5-year plan. You can have a fantastic strategy. You can lay out a fantastic operational blueprint for a team. But if they don't feel like they're part of a team in the first place, and they don't feel like they're cared for by their leaders, and they don't feel like what they're doing is right or doesn't make them feel good, they're probably not going to perform for you the way we need them to perform, right? And that helps us, you know, keep our clients and gain more clients. And that's why culture is so important.
That makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like that's one of the pillars that you use to drive operational excellence. How can you, you know, that's such a vague term, right? Like how can you drive operation excellence as a system rather than just a goal? How do you operationalize that?
Well, I think you break it down first and you make it clear what you, how you define it, like what the component parts are. You know, I think operational excellence is a result of discipline processes, leadership, training, and measurement all working together. And I don't think it's a destination you just arrive at. I think it's a system in and of itself, right, that you maintain. And then I think consistency is built through systems, not individual heroics. You know, I've talked often about the white knight riding in to save the day.
Right.
Like that's not a blueprint.
Across thousands of employees, that's a tough thing to count on.
That's right. And that's why, you know, some of the earlier centralization discussions really, we had so many conversations about centralizing some of our operation to get a handle on that. And so, you know, I think strong organizations, and certainly what I've experienced, improve consistently, Julian, right? Instead of reacting to problems after they occur. And, you know, I think that's the difference between managing a business and engineering one. So, you know, the system is super important. And I think each system, right, and high-performing team that kind of values systems, you know, shares three characteristics, regardless of industry, but military, you know, hospitality. I've see your friends now in multiple industries. I'd say leader quality and leader endurance is super important. And that's something that I've been evaluating very closely here, and we spend a lot of time on in the service companies. Discipline and execution and consistent coaching at every level. I'm coached by my board, my ownership group. I have been, and you know, I value it. Down to our frontline employee, the newest guest room attendant. Super important that they're coached regularly. And I don't think any team's immune to that. But those,
is that something that you've changed as part of the culture now? Is that something that you guys are demonstrably doing more of now than was done in the past?
Yes, for sure.
And you're seeing the impact?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're seeing it with our retention. You know, we have fantastic retention and long tenure.
Yeah, that's huge in a people business, right?
That's right.
So, you know, you guys have gone through a number of changes recently. You were telling me earlier about some of the investments you've been able to make, you know, to grow the quality of your organization, to kind of be the foundation for your future growth. Tell me about some of those things.
Well, you know, Julian, we've started to invest strategically, which is really nice. Again, coming out of COVID, it was hard to appreciate, you know, where the industry was going, how the company was interacting with the industry. And, you know, it's become clear now that, you know, there were certain things that if we wanted to continue to grow and make sure we could truly scale the company, we needed to put into place. So we started investing strategically instead of like more near term, which is, I think it's a fair statement to say how we were looking as a company when I joined the team. And that changes everything. That shift in horizon and how you look at it a little bit more long-term strategic versus near-term sort of triage changes everything in how you build a company. So we've made investments in leadership development, technology, significant strides in technology across nearly all departments now. Some are still like in motion, but because of the success we've had, you know, in terms of automating our HR and recruiting function, in terms of bringing on a very modern tech suite to help our go-to-market motion, you know, automation at our properties. You know, we're piloting robots today on our properties, but just real time.
I want to hear more about the robots, but we'll get back to that.
Okay, excellent. Real time, you know, reporting within our operation against our measurements for success is something that's much easier said than done in a geographically disparate, multi-property, multi-flag enterprise that is using different systems already that we kind of, in some cases, come into. And so we're now getting a chance, you know, because of automation and our success and comfort with it, based on these investments, we're starting to figure that piece out. And it's really got me energized. You know, and you know, it's just a virtuous cycle. I mean, we invest in people, their atmosphere, their resources, which is a little bit different than when I joined the company. We're seeing that they deliver, we deliver better outcomes. Our teammates deliver more and clients then stay longer because they're happier.
That's great. So Brian, you mentioned a 5-year plan. Let's talk about your 26 through 30 outlook. Like what are the tenets of your strategic plan and how are you going to grow this business to the place where you and your shareholders are all looking forward to?
Yeah. Thanks, Julian. A few key pillars for that plan. We want to deepen customer success to drive retention of our clients and expand with those clients. Many of our clients have multiple properties, and you know, we want to be the go-to solution that's relied upon, you know, in the high-end luxury space, and we want to continue to be that. So customer success and formalizing that more than where it had been, and even more than where it is today, for sure. We're very interested in that's a key pillar. Another key pillar is automating and innovating. I mean, we just talked about that, but you know, that's not done. That's never going to be done at this point. I mean, you know, you of all people know the pace of change and the, you know, the assistive tech today is just incredible. And I want to take part in as much of that as possible. We're already seeing the benefit of it as a team. We're going to continue to modernize our go-to-market engine. We've had an incredible year after having invested in that, and we're just now starting to scratch the surface with just incredible results based on that. Well, I want to keep feeding that and putting gasoline on that as a pillar. And lastly, Julian, from a pillar standpoint, just sharpening our focus on our service lines, even more than we have today, especially where we can deliver the most value. You know, the benefit of focus and, you know, really honing in on what we're good at, what we're expert at, and what, you know, in turn creates enterprise value, is where we should be focused. And we should, you know, focus less on areas that aren't that.
All right. Now I want to hear about the robot story. Are we going to be having robot housekeepers in the future? Are we going to be walking, you know, the room service trays delivered by, you know, what do you call the humanoid robots? What are you looking at here?
Julian, eventually, listen, my prediction is, and it's not around the bend. And
what have you guys tested out so far?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got a pilot program underway with like-minded clients who are very interested in that. And frankly, they want robots on their property because they exist. And we, you know, we're a good, you know, evaluated service provider, you know, in that equation. And we want to do more of that. But today, I mean, it's predominantly in terms of reliability. It's predominantly, you know, floor cleaning units. So whether it's, you know, sweepers.
Are these giant Roombas?
More or less, Julian, yes. You know, fully automated. They go and, you know, behave, dump themselves and you know, get back out and operate on our, you know, banquet floors in our larger areas. Even up on our housekeeping floors, we have robots that are doing all sorts of floor work. And that's really where I think the robotics has fully matured. There's some things around the bend that we're in conversation, you know.
Yeah, what do you think we'll see next? Windows? Or that's such a dangerous job. I wonder.
Yeah.
You know, I've started to see some things on my social media feed where there's like something they throw on a window and it zooms around and cleans things. Is that in the future? Have you seen some of those demos?
Certainly. Yeah, it's already here. And so we, you know, we use drones as an example.
You use drones today?
We
to
do.
Wash windows?
Where it makes sense. We do. Absolutely.
Is that to get to hard to reach areas?
Yes. In the right area to use them. You know, but the drone technology is not advanced enough yet to do as good of a job as people do. And I can speak from, you know, firsthand experience here, that is indeed the case. And so that it's not a full replacement yet. And I think, Julian, this gets back to, I mean, so Windows, by the way, there are other systems now, especially with new builds where they're already integrating automated robot window cleaning technology on skyscrapers with the new build. But like the retroactive fit for these systems on older buildings, you know, the required kind of engineering construction topside to be able to handle that and the, you know, the agility of the robot to be able to fit, you know, retrofit there. That's something that's kind of.
Yeah, it's much more complex to retrofit than have it build to suit.
It is. But that's already, you know, that's already in motion. And, you know, you can see just drones alone, but, you know, there's all sorts of technology and I think improvements coming where you can deploy a robot out to scale a building and effectively and cleanly, you know, operate. It's not there yet. I think there's large, there's robots that eventually to the future that will come in and be able to just, you know, take over a room and do all aspects of it. They don't. They're not reliable. Yeah,
that seems like that would be a welcome use of technology, given the shortage in the area that you've been describing. So let's shift to the future of hospitality.
Okay.
So looking ahead, what trends do you believe will have the greatest impact on hospitality operations over, let's say, the next decade?
Well, I think workforce availability will remain one of hospitality's biggest strategic challenges, Julian. You know, and I say that in light of all of the discussion on robots, I think it makes workforce stability and retention real competitive advantages for anybody who's in the business of, employing people reliably and counting on them to show up and not just an HR talking point. I think tech, automation, AI will continue to improve and then continue to improve efficiency, but operational excellence, Julian, which is, you know, you know, the high end sort of output of all of the people and resources piece to do the job right with somebody who's trained to do it. I think that's going to continue to depend on disciplined execution and strong leadership in terms of human beings. I don't think that human layer goes away. And I think guests, you know, the guest experience, because we're in hospitality and, you know, we're all about making, you know, making our clients' vision for their customers, like, happen and make it seamless. I think, you know, guests are going to continue to expect exceptional experiences delivered consistently. And that raises the importance or, keeps the importance super high of reliable operational partners and scalable service models. And I would also add, you know, the unity of command. You know, I often say one throat to choke, like, you know, let us do this for you. We'll do this department.
You've got a thick neck.
That's right. Well, right? You know, we'll do it. We'll do it for you. We'll aggregate that cost. We'll do it, you know, cheaper, but you can rely on this. And ultimately your RevPAR and your occupancy.
Do your customers believe that, or do you have to kind of prove it to them?
Hit and miss, Julian. Those that have had experiences before, successful experience with outsourcing, 100% believe it. You know, if they've had experience with us, they believe it. But in some cases, you know,
but there's just, like, a misperception, right? Like, so if you could change one assumption that hospitality executives have about outsourcing, what would it be?
Well, it's not just about reducing labor costs, you know, and it shouldn't be looked at it that way, because you're going to ultimately end up being disappointed and you're going to be shopping again. And you're going to be doing that because...
Well, is that because you get what you pay for? People looking for cheap labor or even gray labor, and then regretting the quality and the risk it creates?
I think, yeah, Julian, I do. I think often it's just dealing with the near term as opposed to that strategic view that I was talking about. But it should be, you know, less about... I mean, cost always comes into the equation. But you can't expect to bring someone in, you know, to do it, you know, cheaper than you, and do it cheaper than you, and then ask them to do more than you were able to do, you know, unless you find the right partner who's got the chops to be able to do it. And I think so you really have to find the right operational partner that can truly, as a hospitality company, understand your operation first, to give you the right kind of, you know, estimate on what it's going to take based on your scope, add to your scope, essentially, what you're missing before it's, you know, a problem later, and have a legitimate discussion about what it's going to take to do the job you're saying you want to elevate to four-star status, right? And so you need a partner who knows and understands how to do that and help you find, you know, that strategic solution. That'll help you improve the performance that you're probably chasing. That'll help you probably, you know, improve the consistency you're looking to chase, you're chasing today, accountability, and de-risk you to a large extent, you know, because a full service provider like the service companies does it all. They take on all of the leadership, management, HR, you know, payroll, benefits, et cetera. We cover all of that. We're fully compliant. So you put that into a company that understands the business, takes it off your plate, all right? It's a much bigger comprehensive view than just reducing labor costs.
Yeah, that really frees you up to focus on revenue or occupancy or you know, the gaming side of the business. So, you know, huge benefit knowing that your housekeeping and services side is taken care of. That makes a lot of sense. So right. let's conclude. What's the next chapter for TSC going to look like? What do you want to do over the next couple of years?
Well, Julian, we're in a growth phase right now, and I want to blow it up. You know, the foundation is now built for sustainable, scalable expansion. You know, we're not reacting to fixes as much as, you know, we were, as an example, when I joined the company. And you know, we're focused on disciplined growth as a company, strengthening client relationships and retention, expanding relationships across all of our service lines, continuing to invest in the systems and leadership pipeline that make consistent execution possible. And lastly, I would just say, you know, coming out of COVID, given that context. It's not just a comeback story after COVID here. I mean, this is a blueprint that I feel really good about. We've proven to this point that the model works, and now it's a matter of accelerating what we've already built.
Well, that's awesome. Congratulations on this transition to leading men and women across, you know, from our services and front lines to across the front lines of the hospitality industry. It's exciting to hear what you're doing there. If people want to learn more about what you're doing or you get to know you or the service companies, where can they find you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. They can find me there. You can find us on our website. Just do a search of the service companies.
And companies, plural.
That's right. You know, that's an easy way to get a hold of me as well.
Fantastic. Well, Brian, thank you for telling us your leadership story today. Congratulations on all the success. And we'll look forward to sharing this with our community.
Thank you, Julian. Truly a pleasure. And thanks for your time and allowing me to come on your podcast. Really appreciate it.
Likewise. Great having you on.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, would you please follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast player? And we'd be grateful if you recommend it to a friend. If you'd like more resources on how to become a better leader in business, we invite you to visit us at growthelevated.com. We'll be back next week with more insight from another great tech leader. Thank you.